Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week is William Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited after last week. That was such a show.
I know. We had a great show last week.
I know. Expectations are high this week, so just prepare to lose all your hopes real early. We've also got Justin Ficarotta of Kill Monty fame.
How you doing, fellas?
Doing pretty good. Justin Fick, what can I say to you, Justin Fick? I'm trying to think of something clever. Come on, this is pre-show banter. Come on.
That's it. Come on. That's like you waving your hand in front of the camera to make something happen.
That never happened.
No, it never happens.
Like I say, Justin Fick is ready to head out to California tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. You're headed back home.
He didn't live in California.
I'm going out to California for the weekend.
Oh.
This is a much needed Fick vacation.
This is a hot date in California?
No.
Somebody say hot date. Something might be happening with hot date later, Justin Fick.
Hide that power.
in California is going to be Justin Fick's birthday, which is actually today. So Justin Fick is going to go buy a hot date for his birthday.
Justin Fick, I actually knew about it being your birthday today, and we have a special segment coming up later in the show just for you.
Oh, God.
But hold that thought, because it's time for the news this Friday, February 23rd, 2007.
Wow.
All right, this week of the news. Yeah.
Good job.
You can take a breath now. This week in the news, ESRB hiring full-time game raiders, presidential hopefuls resurrects federal game bill, Clover vet reunites and forms Seeds, and Lost Planet producer says Western game developers are leading the industry. All this and more on this week's Best Damn Podcast Ever.
All right, so the first in the news today, I picked this article out and thought it was pretty important. The ESRB is hiring full-time game raiders. So this story broke on GamerDad.com and later was re-reported on Game Politics. The ESRB is breaking with tradition and hiring full-time content reviewers to evaluate games. So from the ESRB says, after months of careful consideration, the ESRB will be switching from part-time to full-time raiders in April 2007. This is sort of important. Like, the ESRB sort of works like the Motion Picture Association rating board in that it selects from a cross-section of part-time employees from New York City, which is where they're based, to rate their games. So you get people that don't really work for the ESRB, but they're like, you know, parents and teachers and people that have something to do with kids to rate the game. They get three of them, and they each play the game independently and then come to a consensus on the rating and submit the rating to the publisher.
Now, wait, there's only three?
Yeah, there's three per game.
Oh, three per game. So how many do they have overall?
And they reach out and grab a new three for each game. So if you submit once, you get one group of three people. And you submit again, you get a different group of three people. So what they're talking about now is like actually hiring people full time to test to watch the games being played.
I like it.
What the developers do is they send in like a reel of the worst parts of their game, and the ESRB reviews it. And according to the statement by the ESRB, the full-time raiders will also be responsible for playtesting final versions of the game, time permitting. So this is a little different from how they've been approaching things. And Fick, I think your article is sort of similar, but
yeah, mine sort of ties into it. But this sort of like the ESRB before was kind of like jury duty, it seems.
Yeah, you got called in to do it, or I think this is how this works. I mean, these people aren't like they're not full-time employees of the ESRB, so they just get called in from their regular jobs to watch bad stuff in video games.
Like Clockwork Orange.
So these new employees are actually ESRB employees.
Right.
And they will continuously rate. Okay.
Right. And there are actually advertisements out for people like trying to pull people into B raiders. I've seen them on the internet. It's interesting.
Dude, that's Blake Buck. All right, I'm going to sign up ESRB raider right here, baby.
This would probably cause GameStop's employment to drop by like 50%. But the ESRB might actually need all these testers if a presidential hopeful gets his game bill passed. So the Republican Senator Sam Brownback, who is planning on running for the 2008 Republican nomination for the president, is reintroducing what's called the Truth in Video Game Rating Act. Now, this at first, this seems like just another video game bill, but this is quite different. This is actually going to require the ESRB to complete the games before rating them. So that's play test and beat the game. This is a bit of a different bill. So last month, this guy, Kansas senator, his speech was talking about promoting the greatness of this country through goodness and goodness through greatness and all that crap. But he proposed this bill and gave the quote that quote, "Video game reviewers should be required to review the entire content of a game to ensure the accuracy of the rating. The current video game rating systems is not as accurate as it could be because reviewers do not see the full content of games and not even play the games they rate." So the act would also commission a government accountability office, GAO, study to determine the efficacy of the ESRB rating system. So as Miller mentioned, right now the ESRB views a video of what the most extreme content in the game is, but that's kind of like, you know, it's kind of at the faith of the developer to provide that. And then, you know, in the case of, say, San Andreas, not everything was included. And in the case of Oblivion, there was actually a scene with some very graphic violence that really wasn't included in the video, maybe because there's just so much to Oblivion to show. And in the ESRB actually had to go back and re-rate Oblivion also from T to M.
So this brings up some sort of sticky points. I mean, while I agree that games should be played as much as possible before a judgment is passed on their ratings, how do you play a game that doesn't end? Or, what is content? I mean, in games that have procedural storytelling or procedural content, like how does one rate a game like that? I mean, it's...
Yeah, like Oblivion. I've been playing Oblivion for like 150 hours, and I'm still even not even halfway through all the quests and nooks and crannies in that game. I don't think it's very feasible to say, oh, you got to beat everything in the game and find it all and find all the because look, Blake Buck's been looking for all the I've still yet to find any in Oblivion, but I've heard.
Now Justin Fick has actually picked up Oblivion.
I saw you on Oblivion the other day, Justin Fick.
Yeah, against all better judgment, I could actually do a judgment on it, but I mean it's old hat. It's been seen, but I dove into Oblivion and quickly found out that you can jack dead people and they're pretty much left there in their underwear.
Justin Fisk missed out on this demographic.
even if I didn't need the codes on dead bodies, I would jank the codes and then drop them just so they'd be naked dead bodies.
Look at you. Your clothes are so close to you, but you can't get them. That's what I say anyway. So the Senator Brokeback says that we knew it was going to get there eventually. So I think that I just think his come on, it wasn't that fun. You should have seen that joke coming before we even started the show. Come on, you losers. So I just think his claims that they need to see everything in a game, it's unrealistic to have anybody actually feasibly do that.
Well, my concern is that the price of the ESRB rating will go up. I think it's like I think generally you pay in the order of $2,000 or $3,000 for a rating. Maybe not. I don't really know. I think that if you have to play like 150 hours of a game, like that's a lot of hours. You know, that game... it's going to cost a whole lot more to get your game rated.
And then that cost suddenly makes things even less feasible for, say, indie developers that need ESRB ratings. Because it's really ridiculous to begin with. So, I mean, I think if I were writing a bill about it, I would say that, you know, yeah, maybe a video is not quite comprehensive enough. There should be some sort of demo or a vertical slice, something that is sent to ESRB that can be played through, because really, like, you can't get the feeling of playing God of War by watching God of War either.
Right.
I mean, it's very different to pick up a controller and play it, and plus, you know, there's so many different ways to play, say, Grand Theft Auto, that you really need to give them the game for them to see what's going on.
I actually play Legal Theft Auto. That's where I just drive around. I don't hit anyone. I go to my missions, and if my missions ask me to do anything illegal, I drive to the police station and turn myself in.
You know, I was thinking about this earlier. Like, they had a potential to make a really great anti-game in Grand Theft Auto, that being not doing anything illegal and living a straight life, you know?
Well, like, for the most part, in the original Grand... In most of the Grand Theft Auto games, like, you're only killing, like, drug dealers or like, bad guys. Like, you're not even... Like, you're not usually not encouraged. Oh, run over people on the street because it's fun. Dur-dur-dur. I mean, you're never really encouraged to do stupid stuff like that.
And actually, Postal 2 is like that. You can get through the entire game of Postal 2 without doing anything evil. You can just be a normal dude all week. And that was deliberately designed that way.
Hmm.
Very true.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where this goes, this ESRB thing. I mean, I absolutely believe that we need more thorough game ratings, but I think, like, it's very easy for politicians to say you must play the whole game, when in a lot of cases that's very much impossible in some feasible amount of time.
And look, what's wrong with the tape? I like tapes, okay? I mean, if somebody lies on their tape, then they get in trouble, okay? But you know, what's wrong with making a little reel that shows the worst parts of the game?
Yeah, I think that developers need to be held more accountable for representing their content on their tapes.
Exactly. I mean, because right now, for instance, San Andreas obviously did not include that content in the tape. And the ESRB are the people that are taking flack for it. So I mean, if it's a tape, it really needs to be comprehensive of all the bad things that you could possibly see.
Right.
So which is why if you sit people down with a demo, it's like they'll, you know, and if they're game testers, not like, you know, Jane school teacher off the street, but, you know, someone who actually knows how to play games and knows where to find all the and the chainsaws. You know, sit them down in front of it, and they will find all the nasty parts.
Justin Fick, you and me need to make a game that's entirely and chainsaws.
That'll be the title.
And chainsaws. That's game number two. We'll make that one after Tank. Some chainsaws.
Because like Jets and Guns had such a nice ring to it. And chainsaws.
Oh man, I like that. You heard it here first. That's copyright. Skyright. Best damn podcast ever.
Now is the game gonna contain that shoot out smaller
shoot chainsaws?
All right. Well, on the other side of the gaming pond, Clover Studios veterans reunite and form Seeds.
Oh man!
So Hideki Kai Kamiyama, Atsushi Inababa, and Shinji now resurface with a new game development studio.
That's awful. You try that again, young man.
See me after class.
Wait, Miller, read these names for me.
Yeah, William Miller, you do it. You are resident. You're a resident weeaboo here.
Dude, all right, I'll see if I can do better. So it's Hideki Kamiya.
I would have said Hideki. That's what I would have said.
Hideki Kamiya, Atsushi Inaba, and Shinji Mikami.
So these are the guys who are behind Clover Studios, who published last year's popular, what was it called? Okami. They also did the Devil May Cry games, Beautiful Joes, as well as, the punching one, God Hand. So shortly after Capcom announced the dismantling of Okami developer Clover last year, it was revealed that the studio's two big names, Beautiful Joe producer Atsushi Inaba and Devil May Cry director Hideki Kiyama, have already left the company in start of fresh new challenges. They appear to have found one, as the pair are listed on the Japanese language site for the upstart developer of Seeds, along with fellow Clover veteran and Resident Evil creator Shinji Mikami. So that's a lot of power right there. You've got like a holy trifecta of Japanese game development.
We got the dream team over here.
Holy trifecta. I like that. We could think of ourselves as a holy trifecta.
We're the holy trifecta of podcasting. So while Kiyama and Inaba had left Capcom completely, Mikama last year still worked for Capcom and is contracted as a producer. So I think he's still contracted to do Resident Evil 5, and I think they're doing like a Wii spinoff game for Resident Evil Thumbs Down. But according to Siege website, the studio was formed in August of last year with...
That was Drive-By Judgment.
With Inaba as president. So far, the company has grown to employ 51 people, so that's a fairly respectable developer.
Yeah, that's big. That's already big time.
They're looking to expand even more, and they're already calling out, putting out the call for new people. So it looks like this new company, Seeds, is going to be a big business come maybe a year or two from now.
I like it. It's proof that you can't keep a good developer down. Because I mean, I remember when we reported on Clover getting basically canned by Capcom. That was that was a sad day on BDPE.
That's true.
That was a sad day. They were pretty cool, creative lovers, those Clover guys.
So we'll be tracking them. But also in the world of Japanese game development, the Lost Planet producer, what's his name? Keiji Inafune. He's also the Mega Man guy. We talked about him on our Mega Man Mega Show episode 4. Check it out. He says that Western developers are leading the industry. What? So Capcom marketing specialist Brian Dunn has posted an exclusive interview with coworker Keiji Inafune, Mega Man creator and Lost Planet's executive producer. And he also worked on Dead Rising. Justin Vick, you got that one. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you say?
Thumbs up, thumbs up.
Inafune believes that the company is entering a new era, and the same line as past milestone is Street Fighter II and Resident Evil. I think Dead Rising and Lost Planet has helped establish Capcom not as just a Japanese developer, but as a developer that is on par with and can compete with the top developers in the U.S. He says that Western developers are leading the industry with Japanese developers falling behind.
Interesting.
Yeah, Capcom is definitely getting serious in the U.S. nowadays, and it looks... I mean, I would say Capcom is leading Japanese development outside of the, you know, Final Fantasy weeaboo shit.
And I've noticed that they've had a trend of making very, very, very Western-style games, like, you know, take Dead Rising and Lost Planet. I mean, Lost Planet, not so much, okay, but Dead Rising is definitely, like, you know, Western B-zombie movie.
Yeah, if Dead Rising was a Eastern game, it would have been like Card Battler Zombie, and you would have moved your guy around the grid and used your powers from your deck. this show is not turning out well for the Japanese game development community.
Well, I think you have to put it in perspective. Like, I haven't seen any good handheld games coming out of U.S. developers, whereas in Japan, they're all over the place. So I think that the target market is different, you know what I mean?
That's true.
I mean, like, I don't know, it's more geared towards handheld and cell phone games.
Dude, I want cool Japanese cell phones. When do we get those?
I don't know, but they're... Dude, I went to Japan a couple years ago, and even then, they had, like, GPS talking space phone that told us where the McDonald's was in Tokyo. Like, when do I get talking space phone?
That wait, it tells you where McDonald's is?
Sold.
All right, we got to get Motorola on this quick. Inafune suggests that Japanese developers need to improve working environments, imagining that Western developers aren't nearly as overworked or underpaid as their Japanese counterparts. He muses that by coupling American quality of life with Japanese diligence and selflessness, Japan can turn things around with some risk-taking, too.
It makes me wonder, like, what the studio environment is like over there in Japan. Like, you know, it's been my experience that if you're not working for an RTS company, you know, your studio experience is a pretty, like, laid-back one. You know, you know, you pretty much do your own thing, and as long as you get your work done, you know, everybody has fun and all that. You know, over there, I imagine, like...
They beat the war drum. Oh, yo, yo.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you remember that one scene from Conan the Barbarian where he's pushing the thing around in a circle for 20 years?
Yeah, it starts out with like 10 dudes pushing the thing, and it's just him after it crossfades, yeah, and he's like huge Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so picture instead of huge Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's like 10 50-pound Japanese guys on computers.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is Japanese game development.
So, but actually, Bruce Morrison of Freeverse Software fame had some not so kind words about Japanese game development today, too. Pretty much mirroring Mr. Inafune's comments. And ironically, Mr. Bruce cited Lost Planet as the reason. So take that how you will. So I asked Bruce Morrison for some quotes about how he feels about Japanese games, and his three quotes are "what the," "huh," and ... So if you've played Dead Rising and Lost Planet, you know exactly what Mr. Bruce Morrison is on about.
It's true.
Because Dead Rising had some, like, seriously heads. Like, I love Dead Rising. It's a cool game. But it seriously had some, like, head-slapping moments. So your dude, who is a photojournalist, is dropped off at a mall via helicopter. So driving there via helicopter or flying, he, is taking some overhead shots of zombie attacks in the street. So he's taking shots, people getting ripped out of cars, bitten in the neck, blood spraying everywhere, and all that kind of stuff, and just hordes of dead. And for some reason, 4 or 5 hours into the story, he's still asking what the hell is going on.
Dude, that's what I hate about all zombie movies. Like, because you know when you go to a zombie movie, like, we already know the plot. Okay, zombies, we're done. I hate when you go to a zombie movie and all the characters got to play, what's a zombie, for the first, like, 45 minutes.
See, that's why I like Dawn of the Dead.
That's true.
I mean, it starts off right away. So there's this chick and her husband, and the husband gets bit by this girl, and then he turns into a zombie and gets hit by a car, and then just like right after that, it goes into shooting people in the head. Perfect.
That's Dawn of the Dead. That's not real Dawn of the Dead. Okay, the real Dawn of the Dead came out in the 70s. All right, you might want to look it up. George A. Romero. Okay, all right. And I know the difference.
Dude, new Dawn of the Dead is king of my heart. So suck on that one, Mr. Film Critic.
Look, I went to film school for 2 semesters.
They shoot a baby in the face. Argument over.
All right. Well, we got anything else to add to this? Are we ready for releases?
Let's do it.
Let's have releases.
All right, this week in releases, we've got Flow on the PlayStation 3. This is, I believe this is coming out on their digital download client, not in a store or anything. Flow is a game that involves a player guiding a tiny aquatic worm-like microorganism through various depths of the ocean to consume other organisms and evolve their own organisms as players advance. Almost said orgasms. It is currently available as a Flash game, but has been ported.
That's a different Flow.
ported over to the PlayStation 3. So yeah, this is a little web game that they brought to the PlayStation 3.
Man, that's like ultimate success story. I made a web game, and now it's on PS3.
Yeah, seriously.
Exactly.
Bam.
Crackdown is a sandbox-style game, a.k.a. Grand Theft Auto knockoff, which features co-op play in the same open environment as the single-player mode. It also includes a Wonka-style ticket into the Halo 3 beta. Now, Justin Fick is getting this weekend without question, and Bruce Morrison may already have it.
Dude, so Blake Buck pre-ordered Crackdown, and I was like, Crackdown, this split looks fun. But then I played the demo a little more, and I was like, Then the reviews came out, and they were kind of like, And now I'm kind of like, So I think I'm going to go get my reserve bucks back.
But you don't want the beta, Blake Buck?
Dude, screw that beta. I'm already in the beta. I'm in my own beta. It's called the Blake Buck Beta. It's just for me.
Well, I gotta say, I played the Crackdown beta, and I never ruined so many pairs of pants in my life. Crackdown, gonna be thumbs up for sure.
It looks good. There's just not enough to do in that game. It's like, all right, I'm jumping high. Now what? I guess I'll jump over some stuff.
Yeah, you can jump over some stuff, and then it's jump and shoot.
Supreme Commander for the PC. Spiritual sequel to what is considered to be the greatest strategy game of all time, Total Annihilation. I don't know who wrote this. but they're right on.
Yeah, yeah. Our releases were done by the Wiki Fairy this week. We didn't even do them. They're not even formatted right. Wiki Fairy, you got to get on the ball. Look at the rest of this wiki. You clean that mess up. Come on. Supreme Commander looks cool, though. I got to be honest. It's got like a, it got like an 8.88 or something on GameSpot. It looks pretty hot. I'm liking it. Justin Fick, what do you think?
I know Petroglyph was keeping their eye on this one because they're also making some RTS games, and Supreme Commander looks like the number one contender. So it's definitely looking good.
Uru Live is out of beta as of February 15th, and it now includes two brand new ages. But it's an online adventure game with no carnage, so you guys probably won't mention it. Oh, they probably will mention it since Buck is the biggest Myst fan. I hate you, Wiki Fairy. I hate Myst, and I hate you. So, I thought this was just coming out on GameTap. I guess they juked this somehow. Oh, it's going to be on Steam, too. So I guess they've somehow gotten a Mac deal as well.
See, we should come out with Ubuntu Live. It's the spiritual sequel to Uru Live.
Dude, no one could handle Ubuntu Live. Did you just be in the jungle and you get a stick and it says, escape? No, let me go back. They give you a brick and it says, escape.
That's two games. We've written the design doc for two games already on the show.
Why aren't publishers just listening to us and just hiring us right now? I don't know. Feedback, festivepodcast.com. All right, now it's time for the judgment. All right, guys, this week, yet again, Blake Buck is the only one who brings judgments to the table because I'm the only one who plays video games on this show. It's sad. It's sad. Are you sad, William Miller?
I'm pretty sad.
Yes. Yes, you're sad.
Dude, I'm playing games and I'm stuck in Oblivion.
I'm stuck in Oblivion Gates.
So I'm not playing games, I'm playing game. Singular.
Alright, so this week I picked up earlier this week Final Fantasy VI. So I haven't been able to play this game all the way through. I've only been able to play it a little bit, but you know, I played Final Fantasy III back in the day. I guess I'm not really totally the authority to be reviewing this since I haven't really played it all the way, but we're desperate for content, so here goes. Alright, so Final Fantasy VI on the Game Boy Advance is made by Squaresoft and was originally released in the United States as Final Fantasy III on the Super Nintendo. To myself and people probably my age, this is easily one of the most seminal 2D role-playing games ever made. Wouldn't you agree, William Miller, Justin Fick?
Yeah.
I agree. Probably best Final Fantasy so far. Although I haven't finished 12 yet.
So this is essentially the Final Fantasy III we remember. It's 6 in Japan. It's the one with Terra and Locke and had Mog the Moogle, and you were fighting with Espers, and you're fighting the Empire and Kefka, and it was so epic.
I remember the last boss in that game, Blake Bug. You had to fight down from the top of Kefka's tower instead of from the bottom up.
It was a hell of a thing.
It was a hell of a thing, yeah.
And then you had to battle Jesus or whatever that thing was at the end. All Final Fantasy games end with you battling something that looks slightly reminiscent of Jesus. So the pros of this game, it's a near-perfect port of Final Fantasy 3-6, but it's now portable. So you can't go wrong with that. I mean, Final Fantasy 3, if you haven't played Final Fantasy 3 back on the Super NES, you should definitely, you know, try this one out, or the original. Really good game. It's got a strong story and easily some of the best music. I think when this game was released, it was the greatest music in a video game ever made, period.
It still holds its own.
It does.
Yeah, like even today, it still holds its own. They have concerts every now and again nowadays where they play like the full orchestral version of the little like 8-bit music that he wrote.
Well, like the end boss music for Final Fantasy 3-6 was like a four movement symphony.
Seriously.
Like it was like this 12-minute monster.
Well, look, baby, you need 4-movement 12-part symphony when you're fighting Jesus.
So it's got a good nostalgia factor if you remember it. So those are all the pros. The cons, it's only a near perfect port. There's some graphical slowdown on some of the fancy, you know, screen blasting effects. You know, like, what's that one that dude's got? I think it's called, like Bio Blaster. You remember, like, Edgar had, like, the Bio Blaster tool, and it was that?
Yeah. No, that nobody ever used because he had the crossbow at the same time.
Dude, I love Bio Blaster, baby. green smoke in your face. There's nothing worse than that. So, that's like stuff like that will slow down more noticeably than it did in the Super Nintendo. There's just some weird graphical slowdowns in places as well. Also, the audio is not 100% perfect. The Game Boy Advance sound emulation is not as good as it was back on the Super Nintendo. So some of the sequences don't come off nearly as good. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I hear the opera sequence is not nearly as good as it was on the Super NES.
Oh, man, I remember that.
Yeah. That's only what I've heard. But, when you're playing on the micro, that screen's real small. And I gotta read small text, and I don't like it.
Blake, you don't read text anyway.
That's true, I just mash A whenever I see them blue boxes come up and they go away. So, if you haven't played Final Fantasy VI, definitely pick it up. The only other thing I gotta say is $35 for Game Boy Advance? God damn! I got all that money? Can't it just be like $20? Come on.
Dude, Virtual Console, $10.
Has it come out on Virtual Console yet?
No.
No, it hadn't. Dude, it's not going to be out forever on Virtual Console. Because look how long it took to come out on Game Boy Advance.
I hear these Virtual Console games are coming out are jank. Like, they don't have all the codes they used to, and...
Oh, no. Well, that's terrible. But overall, yeah, Final Fantasy VI, a great trip down memory lane and a great RPG for those who haven't played it. So thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
All right, now it's time for the jank. Justin Vick, what is your jank power?
All right, I did not bring Judgment, but I brought double jank this week.
No way.
I did. So the first part of this jank is I took our challenge, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, to heart. Mm-hmm. I remember Blake Buck saying that Serious Sam 2 is impossible, and no one can.
Uh-oh.
So I made it my personal quest to locate Serious Sam 2 and found it, used a GameStop. Now this is my jank of the week, because I picked this up. Tag said $20. I take it to the register, $8.
$8. Wait, now is this the this is the PC version, right?
This is the Xbox version.
Oh no! See, now this is a different game. This is, I told you wrong, Justin Fick. See, this is Serious Sam 2. I was actually referring to Serious Sam: The Second Encounter. I forgot that there was actually a Serious Sam 2 as well.
Okay, well, you know what? That's good then, because I happened to borrow Serious Sam 1 for the Xbox, which is First and Second Encounter back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And because the sad part about Serious Sam 2, not backwards compatible.
Oh,
lame! Should have checked your sheet first, Justin Fick.
That's probably why it was $8. So I was saddened to find that. But if the challenge really is Second Encounter, I happen to have that in the other room right now, and I'm about to kick its ass tonight. First Encounter is my screaming. I f***ed First Encounter until it loved me.
Well, see, Blake Buck has beaten First Encounter too, but it's the Second Encounter that the end of that game is crazy.
Is that the one where you're just in a field and they're like,
yeah, it's just it. No, dude, it's like dusk till dawn, demons flying out of every orifice on the earth. And I love it because you can like see the moon like going over the horizon. That like represents how long you gotta last because you gotta wait for the sun to rise. It's truly an epic battle.
I love the level design in Serious Sam, though, just because, like, all, like, you know, like Quake and Doom have all these twisting hallways, and Gears of War has the has like the epic battlefield, all this cover. No, Serious Sam, big room, hundreds of dudes, shoot, go.
I remember Blake Buck playing through Serious Sam when we were in high school. I guess it was the Second Encounter. I'd check in on him at about 2 o'clock, right? And then I go, you know, do my thing and eat and, you know, come back about 8 or so. And he's on that same place in that big field with these dudes with cannonballs for hands running after him and like meteors falling from the sky.
I hate that game. I hate it. It's unbeatable.
I gotta say that is probably the coolest The coolest enemy ever is the kamikaze dude who has no head but still screams and holding two bombs and doesn't stop screaming ever. He will just continuously scream on loop until he either blows up or gets shot.
All right, so Justin, what is your second? What is your second jank here?
My second jank is in honor of both Valentine's Day and drugstores. Dwayne Reed drugstores, Valentine's Day candy, 75% off. Blam.
Oh man!
One of those big damn hearts full of chocolate, $2.
Blick Buck only buys millionaires after Valentine's Day. Okay, I got to treat myself. Well, all right. Anything else, guys?
That's my double jank.
All right. Well, now it's time for the discussion. All right, guys. So what's the discussion this week? What is this?
Justin Fick. Why don't you tell us about codes and why you got all of them?
Now, this wasn't my doing here. This is apparently our good friend Wiki Fairy. But tonight's discussion is oh my god, codes. The code can be one of two things, and we can take this discussion in two possible directions. The code could be first of all as in cheat code. Could be in Contra code, or could be a Game Genie code, or also the codes that we could discuss tonight could be BDPE codes, which means anything good in video game.
That's true. We don't really. It's a pretty open ended topic there. I think what the Wiki Fairy meant were game codes, but.
All right. So my first exposure to the codes was. Was an old magazine, and for those of you who remember Nintendo Power, you got nothing on the Nintendo Fun Club.
Oh, I remember that.
They had about six or seven of them before they turned into Nintendo Power, but that's where the first codes were distributed, and so many codes like the second quest code for Zelda, as in putting Zelda in as your name to get right to the second quest. They had of course the Konami code. Which is of course immortalized by now. I don't even need to say it.
Above down, left, right, left, right, baby, slow down.
Exactly.
We'll talk about Konami code a little later.
So this quickly evolved into Nintendo Power, which had a whole section about codes.
Wasn't it called like Cheat Watch or something like that in Nintendo Power? You think I could get Cheat Watch?
So Justin Fick, here's what I want. Are you ready? I want Justin Fick to recite all of the cheat codes that he can think of right now. Go.
All right. First of all, Konami code is up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, BA, start. Gradius is up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start. Gradius 3 is up, up, down, down, LR, LR, BA, start. Because left, right, BA, start blows you the f*** up. let's see what else. And also, Gradius code does not give you 30 lives. It gives you full weapons except in Life Force, which gives you 30 lives. And also, we have of course Akari Warriors is ABBA. We also have I believe it was a Capcom game. Was it Trojan that you hold up and you press start to continue your game? And then of course games had hidden continues by say pressing select twice. What other codes can I think of?
Come on, Code Train.
That's about it. I know I missed some obvious ones, but those are the ones that stick out in my head. ID kick fucking ass. Full ammo and keys. Doom.
Oh, man.
Can't leave that one out.
ID cutie. ID KFA. ID clip. ID cross. I remember all them codes. ID Scotty man. Level skip.
Now, actually, a quick ID KFA. Question. This was actually discussed at Freeverse with great heat and argumentation. But there is argument over what IDKFA stands for. Now, of course, Justin Fick believes it stands for ID kick fucking ass. Now, the other camp believes, and this is Bruce Morrison, believes that it's ID keys full ammo because that's what it gives you.
Dude, that's lame.
Lame.
Dude, he's a
You better tell Bruce Morrison he's lame.
Oh,
Oh, if you're listening to this show, and I hope you're listening to the in the office with all the speakers turned up, so right when I say this, everybody looks at you and says, "Bruce, you're a b-." Everybody do it right now. Bruce, you're a b-. And if that did play out as described, email me at feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com.
Also, I'm pissed off at Bruce because he's been running this little thing on the site, the best game intros of all time. He's putting a little Ubuntu clip up there for his favorites. He refuses to put the Warcraft 2 intro movie in the top three.
Dude, I don't think I've ever even seen that.
I've never seen Warcraft 2 intro movie.
Dude, you guys suck. You guys suck so much.
See, I knew right when Fick said he hadn't seen it. It's like, oh yeah, Fick, we win. Now Miller's the...
You know, Blake Buck, I was going to invite you to the cool club, but that's not going to happen.
No,
anymore.
I don't want to be in the cool club. All right, so what are some of our favorite codes of all time? William Miller, go.
Ooh, I remember, Justin Fick, you mentioned this one. If you named yourself Zelda in the Game Boy version of Zelda, you got different music.
Coming soon to Guitar Hero 3.
William was hoping Fick was going to bail him out on a joke. I heard that.
I didn't know what to say.
Man. What else you got, son?
Dude, why are you looking at me? That's the only game I played in the last 10 years.
You suck,
no, no
dude.
Discussion. No discussion about favorite codes is complete without Game Genie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Game Genie. I remember that power.
So, wait. Justin Fick, describe to us what Game Genie is. Maybe some of our less retro-inclined gamer listeners.
Yeah, for some of our younger listeners and listeners who are retards, Game Genie is a cartridge that
you know who I'm thinking of.
So game we're all thinking of the same one person, aren't we?
All right, keep going. Sorry.
All right, so Game Genie is a cartridge that it's kind of like a cheat tape that attaches onto your regular tape, and you stick it in your Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and when you power on, instead of giving you your tape, it would give you the Game Genie screen, which was basically this nasty Atari-looking kind of screen where you put in codes, and Game Genie, because it's a genie, gives you three wishes, three codes you can put in.
Yeah, I remember on the NES one, you got three lines for three codes, and that was the max. There's no mixed mashing of codes either. You had to pick your three codes. And I remember, and that's how they got you, because it came with a book of codes, but then if you wanted to, you could subscribe to the codes, and they would send you a little, for like, you know, $5 a month, they'd send you another little pamphlet with all the new codes in it.
So basically what these codes did was they basically just patch over the program code. And it would give you things like, you know, infinite lives or infinite ammo, start you off with full guns, you know, level skip.
Yeah, weren't you like quite literally entering like hexadecimal values and memory locations for your codes?
No, it was only like 8 characters long. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
So like in instead of like hex values, it gives you 16 letters. So I would imagine that like the first four hex digits are like the memory location, and the next four hex digits are your new value, something like that. I don't know exactly how it works, so don't quote me on it, but that's the concept.
See, Game Genie never really worked too well for me, because I always lost the book, and then you didn't have the book and you were screwed, because it wasn't the internet back then. Like all these kids today, like, he's like, what, no internet? Where's the podcast if there's no internet?
Now, growing up, we didn't have internet, but since Justin Fick used to live in Redmond, Washington, Nintendo Hint Line was a local call.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
That was the ultimate code depot.
Oh, yeah. Code. So, but the only thing is you couldn't ask them about Game Genie. You ask them about Game Genie, they tell you to go f*** yourself. No.
Yeah, they said, you call them on that, they said, you better contact Galoob.
Whatever happened to
that stupid name, dude? That's what like every like kids product was made by. or something that sounded like Gloob back in the day.
Now speaking of Gloob, the codes, the power was so strong that Nintendo actually sued them for a Game Genie. Basically, they didn't like people, I guess, just cheating on their games and claimed that what the Game Genie did was created derivative works of the actual game itself, and therefore was a violation of copyright law. So, I mean, it initially did stymie them in the beginning, but in the court case, like, and then what they found out too is that the Game Genie really did breathe a whole lot of life into all these old games, like games that I never would have played again, either because I beat them or because they sucked so badly that
they were too hard.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden. you could go back and actually, you know, play and enjoy these games with cheat codes. You know, like play Mario Brothers and jump twice as high, or, you know, always have fireballs, or, you know, it's like, so Game Genie then went on to create the Super NES version. They had a Sega Genesis version. They even had versions for portable systems like the Game Gear and the original Game Boy. And I just want to say, I'm looking at the picture of this here, and I never owned the Game Boy Game Genie, but Jesus Christ, this thing is a monstrosity.
Dude, William Miller did.
I knew, I had a friend who had one of those things where, like, your tape, it sticks in there, and then, like, your tape's, like, sticking on the back of your Game Boy just hanging out. I remember that.
So later on, this would, lend its way to, say, like the Action Replay, or the big one right now is Game Shark, but Game Genie was the original codes.
See, it used to be so easy. Like, I remember you could just stick this thing on your game and stick it in your Nintendo. I always thought it was a little weird, you know, how it was like it would pop out of your Nintendo and you're like, "Ooh, I'm hacking it. I can tell because it's not closing like it's supposed to. It's hacking." But like, you know, it used to be so easy for these cheat devices. And then, like, after the PlayStation, and now finally with the PlayStation 2 and Xbox, it's virtually impossible for these, like, kind of clunky, you know, plug-in cheat devices. Like, they could never make a Game Genie nowadays, you know?
I mean, it doesn't matter, though, because games nowadays are so damn easy that no one is ever thinking about Game Genie. They just go to GameFAQs, get a walkthrough, done.
That's true. Like, whatever happened to really hard games? Like, Simon got the other day. On Dreamcast.
No. No, we don't talk about the game.
I mean, holy crap. Like, like, go on YouTube and watch somebody play Chapter 5. You'll see.
Dude, that's all YouTube video. Look this up on YouTube. It's a guy in Japan playing arcade... And he's playing both players at once and beats the last boss without getting hit on either person.
Okay.
Like, it's, yeah, just amazing. And then also the Treasure, the people who did also did Gradius 5. And that is, that's even harder.
Justin Fick, I asked you the other day, hey, Justin Fick, should I buy Gradius 5? And you're like, oh, yeah, it's awesome. Dude, I would have played, like, 20 minutes of that game and said, I'm done with this, and threw it in the floor.
You're a dust yourself off and jump back into that.
No. That was just hypothetical. I didn't even buy it.
No. Yeah, this probably would be a game that would just kick your ass and you would throw it in the garbage. And you probably come back to the podcast crying about it.
You would. So, Justin Fick, we sort of briefly mentioned the Konami code. Can you regale to us the history of such code?
Yeah, the Konami code, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start, is has become a staple in Konami games everywhere. Now, this code is has several functions depending on the game. So if you were to enter it into, say, Contra, you would get 30 lives. And if you entered into, say, Gradius, you get full codes.
Which means all the guns.
So the first time it was used was in the original Gradius in 1986. And then it's pretty much been in every Contra game, every Gradius game since then.
Now, I heard that it was the guy that was porting Gradius over to the Super NES put this in there because it was too hard for him to test.
Their American fingers just weren't nimble enough.
No. Hashimoto was the guy that made it. He developed the port in 1985. I'm looking at Wikipedia. 1985 game, Gradius. And he was porting it over to the Famicom in 1986. And he found the game too difficult to play during testing, so he created the legendary Konami code, which gives you full power-ups.
Oh, man.
So, and then the game that made it famous, though, was Contra.
Because Contra's impossible, baby. Unless you're Justin Fick.
Yeah, I will slap Contra like a red-headed foster child hooker.
And if you act fast, you can get Contra free this month on Xbox Live Arcade if you get 1,500 Microsoft GamerScore points.
Okay. I'm gonna talk about that for a second. Speaking of codes, because I'm getting those codes. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, Justin Fick. I want you to give us like a breakdown of how to get those GamerScore codes.
So basically, Xbox.com is having this rewards program wherein if you raise your gamer score by 1,500 points by mid-April, then you will get mega cash and prizes.
Oh, man. I love it.
And then there are three tiers of prizes depending on what your gamer score starts at. So if you start at 0 to 5,000... You get like a gamer picture. You'll get a desktop a dashboard theme. You'll get Contra, an Xbox Live Arcade. Second tier, I believe, is all that plus 100 MS points and a T-shirt. And then third tier is 200 MS points and Fusion Frenzy 2. So Justin Fick, of course, being the complete that he is, jumped on this. However, I decided to raise it up a notch. So Justin Fick started this contest, started at 7,000 gamer score points. Now, Justin Fick wasn't happy with that yet, because I played the demo of Fusion Frenzy 2. I didn't like it, but I'm going to win it anyway just because I can. So what Justin Fick is doing right now is not only is Justin Fick getting the 1,500 points, he is waiting to enter until he gets 10,000 points and then entering and then getting 1,500 more. So altogether requiring 4,500 points.
Justin Fick, how do we do it?
And what's your plan of attack, Justin Fick?
Well, so right now, the status is Justin Fick is at like 9,800. So I'm just a little bit off of 10,000. So basically what I did is I went out and scrounged up the rest of those old EA Sports games. So I went and got NBA Live 06, NBA 2K6. It was College Hoops 2K6. I did NBA 2K6 a long time ago. Got that 1,000. So I grabbed those. those took about 40 minutes apiece for 1,000 each. I also got Fight Night Round 3. However, Fight Night Round 3 is actually a very good game. I'm actually really impressed, and I'm keeping that one. But So I went quickly from about 6,800 to 9,800.
So Justin Fick, what's your advice for me? I have around like about 3,000 points. What should I do? Should I hold out for the T-shirt or just go for the basic codes? And what game should I do?
Well, I would say that you could easily get to second tier, which is 5,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say go out and get rent it if possible. NBA 2K6 and College Hoops 2K6. They're basically the exact same game. They each take about 40 minutes and they're 1,000 points apiece.
How do I get the 40 points? How do I get the 1,000 points?
Basically, all you got to do is each one has they have 5 achievements apiece.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little different from game to game, but they're each one of them has like get a certain number of 3-pointers with one player. It's very easy. Get a certain number of points with one player. Also very easy. Certain number of steals in one player. Certain number of blocks. You know, very very easy stats based stuff. All you got to do is go into your options, turn all your stats up to max, turn all the computer stats down to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Turn quarter length up to as far as it'll go, so you can get them all in one game, and then pretty much just start the game and just start b- banging them out. You could probably get all of them by the end of the third quarter.
Wow.
And then after that, just go into options, turn the shot clock off, because you'll probably be leading about 300-0 at that point. So just turn shot clock off, run your guy to half court, and leave him there for the rest of the game. Done. 1,000 points each.
A very powerful strategy indeed, sir. So those of you who are interested in getting some free swag from Xbox, there's your 2,000 points right there.
Exactly. So next episode we'll have the finish up strategy for getting the final 1,500.
Oh man,
good deal,
awesome. All right, well, one thing before we move on, guys, I want to tell you guys about one of my favorite codes of all time. And the first one, these are both Midway games. The first one is, you guys remember NBA Jam?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
NBA Jam had codes where you would put in, like, your initials and, like, your birth date, and it would, you like, save your game, right? But if you put in special initials and birth dates, you get, like, secret players. And remember, you could unlock Bill Clinton and do, like, high-flying, flaming dunks with Bill Clinton back in 94. And that was hot.
Dude, they need to remake NBA Jam.
Didn't they have, like, the Beastie Boys in there, too? Or, like, they had a lot of...
Dude, they had, like, Mortal Kombat characters in NBA Jam. They had all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, Midway had lots of crazy cheats back in the day.
Man, speaking of Midway, you remember the Pleasure Dome? You got them 200 keys in, what was that game?
Total Carnage.
Total Carnage, that's what it was. Pleasure Dome, Midway Pleasure Dome. Nobody knows what goes on in there. But it's good.
And my final favorite cheat, or favorite code, easily, by far and away the best code ever, Mortal Kombat, either 2 or Mortal Kombat 3, either one, really probably 3 is what gets the biggest hat tip. Because in Mortal Kombat 3, you would go to Versus screen, and it would show you two dudes there, and then you just push buttons to put in codes, and sometimes you'd get a code. You guys remember that?
Yep.
Had them boxes down there, you just mash buttons, and then sometimes the buttons lined up, and you got a cheat code. And you were in a secret level, or had a secret character or something. Those are the best cheats.
Now, would the Mortal Kombat fatalities count as codes?
Oh, yeah, man. Those things were passed around, like, I don't know, there was a canon of Mortal Kombat cheats that was like oral tradition when I was growing up. like passed down from older brother to younger brother down the line.
You got to get about sweep distance away, all right? You got to hold down. toward, back toward, punch, and you're done. You bite his face off.
Yeah, the Anglo-Saxons passed down Beowulf. We passed down ripping your heart out in Mortal Kombat.
They're about the same thing, pretty much.
All right, well, we got anything we want to add to this, or is it time for the contest?
Blake Buck, I'm ready for the contest.
All right, let's do it. All right, guys, last week on the show, we asked you all, we had a new contest. It was to take Nintendo characters and write us erotic fan fiction about those Nintendo characters. Now, some would say this was ill-conceived. Those who say that are wrong, because this is truly the greatest contest ever. So, we're still not quite done taking entries, so you still got a little more time, but we do have one entry to whet your appetite. Now, we're not going to do the whole thing, because it's rather long, but we're going to read you a little of our good pal, Sippin' the Swede, Durando Briding's entry into the erotic fanfiction contest.
This is the return of Sippin'.
Oh my god. We have not heard from Sippin' the Swede in quite some time.
Holy crap.
I'm actually very surprisingly pleased and welcome our Swedish friend back with open arms.
So Sippin' writes, "I dare you, I double dare you to read my submission on the podcast. So here it is, my jaw-dropping, perfectly FCC-conformed, but still totally deserving erotic Nintendo fanfiction. Either, if you don't either die from laughing or shock, I have failed my goal." I could read this to you guys right now. It's several pages long, all right? But he did us one better. Mr. Sippin' the Sweet sent us an audio file of not only himself reading this fan fiction, but what? Let me read it in his words. Not only himself reading this, But a female voice, who he says here, I had to pay a 12-year-old Bulgarian hooker to do most of the reading because I wanted a sensual female voice. So now you have to play this or else I'll have wasted 5 cups of rice. So the file is, this thing is 10 minutes long. I don't know if we've got time to listen to all 10 minutes of this.
We could provide it as supplementary material. We'll put it in the feed.
Yeah, it'll be available. So, and look, he still may win. I mean, this is a strong submission. So we'll play a little of it.
You're setting the bar high.
This should inspire you. So here we go.
Feeling too distracted by having Princess Daisy's Goomba's rice in front of him to care about being practically naked. Can I eat your super mushroom? Whispered Princess Daisy slowly in Mario's ear. Mario nodded silently and Princess Daisy fell to her knees.
Very powerful. Very moving.
Oh my God. I want to hear that in its entirety by myself.
On your iPod in the bathroom. Yeah. So, an excellent submission by Mr. Siffin the Swede. You know, you guys are going to have to work hard to beat that. He sent us an audio file.
I say we hide his full power.
It had mushroom music in the background. Dude, what was all that that noise in the back?
Dude, that was hot date in audio form.
Sippin has always set the bar on our contests, okay?
And you set it pretty high today, sir.
Maybe we'll have some more. We do have some more entries, so we'll be reading some more next week, but keep them coming. But also, guys, we got a message from our resident expert, Tom Barbalay, earlier this week. He sent me a little email that he wanted us to play on the show in regards to the contest. So I'm going to play this for you right now, guys. So I hope you're ready, especially you, Justin Fick.
Okay.
Greetings, BBPE crew. It's Mr. Easy to Say, otherwise known as Tom Barbalay. Following the recent analysis of the crew's inability to read my multisyllabic prose, I decided to record a little bit of feedback. First and foremost, it's great fun editing the show. Thank you very much for the opportunity to both to edit and also compose on a nearly weekly basis. But more seriously, I think you've grossly overestimated the intelligence of the listening audience to the best damn podcast ever. As any student of Freud would know, it takes an adult intellect in order to create erotic fiction of any kind. We move from kind of raw sexual emotion, I think, in the mid-teens to an ability to construct sexual fantasies in probably the late teens, to the kind of deep, introspective narration that you're obviously looking for in this contest. In short, I think you're grossly overestimating, and we're talking here about average intellectual ability. I think you're grossly overestimating the listenership of this podcast, which I think probably Mad Magazine is considered highbrow intellectual reading. So I'm thinking wrong age limit on an emotional level. I would like to propose an alternative contest, and I don't want to do this to defuse anything. I don't want to take away the amazing heat that you folk bring to the podcast on a nearly weekly basis. But I think there is a sad story underlining these podcasts, which I've heard repeatedly as I multi-edit these shows, and that is Justin Fick lives in New York City. And you need to appreciate New York City, for those of you that haven't been to New York City, has the highest density of single women imaginable. Stackable, in fact. I mean, it literally, per square foot of New York City, there is a single woman at least, if not multiple single women. So I think a far more interesting contest would be to try to find a date for Justin Fick. And I think this is a noble contest. So I'm willing to put up $50 worth of Cafe Press material for anyone who can get a date. Well, I don't want to say anyone on the podcast wanting to get a date with Justin Fick, but anyone who can organise a hot date for Justin Fick. And I think, having listened to these podcasts and having intimately edited these podcasts, I have a sense of who Justin Fick is. I mean, We've heard in great detail. He has a musical family. I think that's always good. Good musical family values. He's a purist with regards to pirates. I don't know, one needs to have some kind of intellectual focus, so his understanding of pirates is good. And he likes pornography that involves buses. And I think all these things can be cultivated into a personal ad for Justin Fick. And, of course, a contest needs a name, and as I act as BDP's paralegal as well, I think we need to call it something like Find Justin Fick a Partner, not PartnerNet Heat. Something like that. In any case, so $50 worth of Cafe Press stuff. Justin Fick, I'd like photographic evidence, I think. I think that's probably necessary. But you need to find Justin Fick a date in New York City. Go! Tom Barbalay signing out.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
It's perfect.
It's a lot of power.
It's a lot of power.
So we've got two contests now, guys. Justin Fick, what do you think of all that?
Well, I gotta say, it's been a while since the last hot date, since my Las Vegas days. Because I remember back when I couldn't even do a podcast because of hot date.
And listeners, Justin Fick's a sexy man. This is not a hard contest. Bag $50 and Cafe Press stuff.
Hey, maybe not even Cafe Press if we can get these shirts going. Look, guys, we're working hard to get some shirts for you to buy from us so we can make money. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we can, instead of $50 in Cafe Press, maybe we can... get you $50 in shirts or something. I don't know. We'll see what goes on down the road. But just know it. We got prizes. So you guys better be getting in some good power.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, Justin Fick, do you have a MySpace or anything we could kind of like, we could start sending out to people or something?
I actually have a Facebook and a MySpace, and I haven't updated either one of them in some time.
Oh, well, is it just / Justin Fick on MySpace?
/ Justin Fick.
MySpace.com/ Justin Fick. You can find him on Facebook. We got to get this sexy player out there.
Spam bots, start your engines.
Put him on billboards. We got to have him everywhere. Put him in the forums. Tell him there's a beast, a game developing beast that's ready to ride, baby. That's what you tell your sister.
Yeah, definitely. Any podcast listeners, hot sisters, or if maybe your mom? I don't know. I'm open.
Oh,
that's terrible. So yeah, so either of those contests, you can send us emails at feedback@bestdamnpodcastever, or call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. Or if you want to drop a secret love note to Justin Fick, just send him an email. And Justin Fick, what's your email? Your love line email?
That would be justin@justinfick.com or justfick@bestdamnpodcastever.com.
There you go. So you'll get right in touch with the man. So, if you want to set up some, online cyber stalking deals, go right on ahead. All right, now it's time for feedback.
All right, we got a lot of feedback this week. So our first one is from Calix. It says, "Hey, BDPE, I'm going to make this email short, otherwise you will not read it."
Oh, there's a smart listener.
"I know how you like voice recordings over email, so I was trying to contact you guys, calling 845-BATTLE-9, but I kept getting people instead of a voicemail. It may be because I'm on the west coast of the U.S. and it could be long distance. Could you please help me use the phone to contact you so I don't have to work on an email? Just out of curiosity, Calix, who do you get at the other end of 845-BATTLE-9?
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm kind of curious myself, and I say, like, if this continues, we should call 845-BATTLE-9 ourselves and see if we can get a hold of them. And then we'll put them...
Absolutely.
We'll put them on the air.
You may need to dial 1 first or something. I'm not sure. I guess it depends on the phone you're trying to use. I don't really know. Maybe try 1, maybe no 1. I don't know.
Alternately, and this is a little more work, you can send us audio files or a link to audio files in email if you'd like.
That's true. All right, so Chris N. here writes, "Hi, I like your podcast a lot. My favorite multiplayer games of all time, in no specific order, are the original Rainbow Six on N64, Call of Duty on the PC, and this arcade game that featured Marvel characters, but don't remember the name of it." Well, that sounds like a great one. On another topic, I have a call. Oh, there wasn't any explanation. On another topic, I'm done with that. All right. I have a question. I have a question I have for you guys. Come on. Get you some grammar. Maybe put this in the show. What are your guys' top 10 favorite catchphrases from a video game ever?
Well, first of all, we don't do top 10s on the show. Top 3 at the most.
We do top 3. Look, in AD 101, war was beginning.
Yeah. All your base are belong to us.
Dude, it's time to it's time to kick ass and chew gum, and I'm all out of gum.
No, it was bubble gum. You gotta don't forget the word bubble gum.
Ah.
Nobody steals our women and lives.
All right. Okay, so we're done with that. We completed that task. Next we got, this is Tara, she says, or Tayra, she says here, I don't know. Stump Buck Heat, Omega Race, go! Ooh, Omega Race.
Ooh, it sounds like an avant-garde racing game.
Dude, I got this shit on lockdown, what about you guys? Yeah, on lockdown.
Go!
Alright, so Omega Race, for me, was an old Commodore game, it was an old Commodore tape. And you plug it into your Commodore, and it's kind of like asteroids almost. Like you get your ship as a little triangle, and you have to go around the edge of the screen. In the middle was like your scoreboard and stuff, and there were other like ships going around, like that sort of creeping around, shooting at you, laying mines, that kind of thing. And there was no racing involved; you just shoot.
Flame. Why would you send us an email about that? Get the hell out of here. What the hell?
Dude, Omega Race was awesome. I don't know what you're
saying.
All right, what's this next email?
All right. This next email is from Ben Buck, double B. So Ben Buck actually wrote us a feedback, I guess, instead of just talking to Blake Buck. But Ben Buck writes, I've got an update to the Mo Money Taxes video. Blake, the YouTube video is horrible quality and is covered with text in the lower left of the screen. I'm working on getting a better version uploaded to YouTube and will forward once I have it.
Get a life, Ben Buck. Please.
Now this is interesting. The music in the video and the show me my opponent phrase is from the song Stuntin' Like My Daddy by Lil Wayne and Birdman. I don't know how to send a direct link, but the song is available for purchase in iTunes. I believe Tom Barbalay was
Yeah, hey, this is from Tom Barbalay. He discovered this. Ben reads it on the forum, and he's like, oh, I'm going to give them a hot tip.
He's like, I read this on a forum somewhere.
So Ben Buck goes on to say, two things I forgot to mention in case you didn't know. I didn't thus necessitating a visit to UrbanDictionary.com. The word stunting refers to showing off, bling, cars, skills, etc. I did not know that. Did you guys know stunting?
I did not know that, no.
I actually did, but I'm from Las Vegas where there's a lot of stunting going on.
So I guess you could say Blake Buck is the stunting figurehead of this show.
All right, so we got another one from Michael K. Says, along with never playing video games, William Miller must have never actually watched college football because Peyton Manning played for Tennessee, not Ole Miss.
Ow!
Ah! Now, it was Eli and Archie Manning that played for Ole Miss. I guess Peyton did not.
Oh, William Miller, you got owned. You got owned, son.
Ah, I got owned. It's true. It's true. I am not a follower of the collegiate football, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I just pretend to be on television.
All right, next email, go.
All right, Chump Boy writes in and says, hey, guys, love the new format, and I also like Tom Barbalay's music at the end. It's like you guys are the MCs of a sweaty nerd party, and you've even got your own DJ. Listening since the IMG podcast number 4, Chump Boy. Yeah.
Somebody say sweaty nerds?
Oh, don't play that too loud, William Miller. They're not here.
No, don't do that.
All right, now it's time for the stump. All right, clowns, I hope you're ready.
All right.
I hope you're ready.
All right, Blake Buck. I think I've hit my stride here, Blake Buck, on these old DOS games that you have never played. Because you couldn't figure out how to work DOS back in the day.
You're going to say like Hugo's House of Horrors.
Zork. Commander Keen. God, I hope you played that game.
Wing Commander.
X-Wing.
All right, what do you got?
All right. All right. My game this week is Cosmo's Cosmic Adventure.
Oh, son. 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 I know I've played this game. I know I've played this game.
Go ahead now.
Cosmo's Cosmic Adventure. I know I can play this game.
I think it's got something to do with space.
Cosmo's Cosmic Adventure. Was this one of those, like, it was kind of like Hugo's House of Horrors, like you would control a character, and it was like an adventure game, and you had to, like, pick up objects and use keys and get around, like, buildings and stuff and solve the mystery? Well, I know I played it. I'm going to stop you when I realize what it is. So you start describing it, I'm going to stop you when I realize it.
Dude, to me, this sounds like lame text adventure game.
No. Cosmic Adventure was a side-scroller. It was made in 1992, featured 16-bit or 16-color EGA graphics at that resolution that everything was at, that 320 by 200 or whatever. Now, this game was billed as being technically superior to Super Mario Bros. 3, which came out before this but was... You know, the DOS scene was a little behind the times, but so it had three-layer parallax scrolling and all this cool stuff. But it suffered from bad frame rates. But it was cool because you could, like, you're this little alien, Cosmo, I guess, and you could, like, stick to this. You could suction to the side of walls and stuff. It's pretty neat.
I don't specifically remember, but I know I've played that game because it sounds real familiar.
I just love how much of a jump there is between 16-bit. And 16 colors.
Yeah, like I said, 16 colors.
That's like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, pink, black, white. That's most of them.
Now remember, you could choose from a palette of 256, but you can only draw 16 at one time.
That's bleeding edge.
Dude, you don't need more than 16 at once. That's ridiculous. Look, your fire level only needs one. Red. Color fire.
Speaking of DOS games, I picked up ScumVM the other day and have been playing through Indiana Jones and the Secret of Atlantis. That's a hell of a game there. I like it.
It feels like a portable generator. That's my favorite line from that whole game.
I haven't played that one, but I have played Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where you punch Nazis in the face.
Yep, that you do.
All right, my stump this week is called Rescue the Embassy Mission.
It's called what?
Rescue the Embassy Mission.
Rescue the Embassy Mission. That's the dumbest sound. This is like a Rainbow Six knockoff. It's like Rainbow Seven or something.
Rainbow Five.
Rescue the Embassy Mission. What is it?
All right. So Rescue the Embassy Mission was an NES game, and basically it's a cross. I don't know how the hell you would classify it. It's like a bunch of little sort of mini games. So you had like your task force dudes. You had six dudes. And you had to infiltrate this building. So the first part of the game was you had to, like, get your snipers into position. So you had to run and jump behind bushes and watch out for the searchlights, or else you get capped and your dude is dead. After that, you could send dudes down the roof, kick in windows, and once you get inside the building, it becomes like this, kind of like back in the NES days, they had kind of like first-person shooter, but it's, you know, like one map unit at a time. So it's like go forward a step, turn one step, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
So the cool thing is once you got your dudes into position, you could choose whether you could just sit back and snipe people, or you could send the dude off the roof and into the window. And it's cool because it would keep track of where all the people in the building are, so you could use your sniper and, like, pick off a bunch of dudes from on, like, the third floor, and then send your guys in the third floor and start kicking some ass. So.
Oh, man.
That said, the game had exactly about 6-7 minutes of gameplay, and then you were done. I'm not kidding. You beat it in like 7 minutes.
That sucks. All right, well, I've got a game to end all game, fellas. All right, now this one this does not fall under my usual definitions. However, it is so good that it's going to blow you out of the water. This game was called Chex Quest.
Chex Quest? Okay, you know what? I played this. This is one of those stupid like marketing game tie-ins that was created by Kellogg's, and it ties into the Chex cereal. So you're this dude. You have to collect different colored Chex to create your Chex mix, and you get pretzel power ups and peanut power ups, and if you're really good, you can get the sugar marshmallow power up, and you create your Chex mix. That's Chex Quest.
Now, Justin Fick, as ridiculous as what you just said, That is actually what you can do. It is a Chex-inspired video game that is a first-person shooter that you run around as the Chex man who's like, imagine a giant Chex thing, but then there are blue arms sticking out of it, and he's got like a visor inside. He's the Chex man, and he runs around with his gun, and he zaps like these green gooey guys, and he shoots them. And then he like takes all the Chex pieces and goes to fucking Chex Mountain or something. And that's the whole game. Dude, I fucking have the disc, baby. I got it off the Chex box. I was like, damn, yo, it's like Doom, but on my Chex box. That was before the Chex box 360. Oh!
Oh!
It came out in like maybe mid-90s. You should look it up. Chex Quest. Awesome. Awesome marketing tie-in. Because see, it wasn't like a game. It was Doom, but with Chex. And like your guy died by getting shot with these green guys and he turned all soggy. And that was no good.
Speaking of soggy, I just want to go through this really quick. I'm going to put out a call to our listeners. I've been trying to think of this cereal for a long time. Now, this is a cereal. I don't remember what it's called. But it was advertised as never getting soggy because it had a curved shape and ridges. So on the box, it would have all these scientific pictures of milk drops falling off this curved flake with ridges. Meanwhile, you submerge the whole f-ing thing in milk and it gets soggy. So I don't know why that came into my mind, but I've been trying to find the name of this cereal. So podcast listeners, feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Help me find out the name of this cereal.
Okay, the hunt is on. Contest number 3. That does for this week in the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
That's a lot of heat.
Oh, I know.
It was a pretty good show. We ran a little long.
I know, my goodness. We've had so much. We had the contests. We had Chex Quest. We had defaming Japanese game developers. It's been a wild ride. If you'd like to send us any email, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com, or you can call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. All right. We'd like to thank Tom Barberlet, who is our Lord and Savior, for editing this show together for us, because I'm not doing it. So he better keep doing it if you guys want to get a show. That's all I'm saying. This month, next month, because this month's almost over, guys, so not a lot of time left, but vote for us over at Podcast Alley. Check out PodcastAlley.com. It's sort of like a podcast ranking site. If we could just get, like, half of you guys to vote, we would be in, like, the top 10, no problem. So go vote for us over at Podcast Alley. And don't forget, this month is Black History Month, so maybe if we get enough promotion of our show, we'll add a black person to the cast. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. There's probably a connection there.
Devron, looking at you.
So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we will see you next time.
Somebody say sweaty nerds. Sweaty nerds. Don't play that too loud, William Miller. Not here. Sweaty nerd party. Sweaty nerd party. Somebody say sweaty nerds. Tom Barberlet's sweaty nerd party. Somebody say sweaty nerds.
Don't play that too loud, William Miller. Not here.
DJ Tom Barberlet's sweaty nerd party.
Don't play that too loud, William Miller. Not here.